morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. It is chili season and many of us are celebrating the return of New Mexico's favorite crop. Green chili lies at the heart of so much of our state's culture and identity that it is hard to imagine what life would be like without it. And yet, Chile is by no means assured of a prosperous future. COVID and changing immigration policies have created a labor shortage of chili harvesters, and human-caused climate change has resulted in drought conditions that threaten the very existence of Chile Verde. On today's show, we will be digging into these issues facing the iconic New Mexican food, and we want to hear from you. What is your favorite variety of fresh-roasted green chili? What won't you put it on? And would you be willing to pay more for your chili if it meant helping the industry survive? You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live 505-277-5866. You can even tweet to us using the hashtag letstalknm. I'd like to welcome my first guest, Chantel Wagner, to the show. Chantel is the co-owner of Big Jim Farms in Los Ranchos de Albuquerque. Good morning, and thanks for joining us, Chantel.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Now, I understand that Big Jim Wagner himself is also on the line.
He cannot join us today.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That's too bad, but we'll catch him next time. So, Chantel, how long has your family been growing chili in New Mexico?
Our family's been farming in New Mexico for over 100 years. I'm fourth generation, so my great-grandfather started it. And my dad, who farms at Big Jim Farms, Jimmy Wagner, he's been doing it his entire life. So he's a pretty good chili expert. He knows what he's doing for sure.
A lot of knowledge in the family there.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this year's crop looking like on the farm?
This year's crop was interesting. It was definitely a challenge from different things impacting us, from the weather, the hail, to the lack of water. But we have some chili, and we're at U-Pick Farm, so people are able to come out and pick it.
Right.
And get the experience, yeah.
So you don't have exactly the same issues with labor that other farms might be having?
Not to the great extent that they are, but we still need people to, you know, operate our business as well and weed and do different things during the season. So we definitely face some of those challenges of labor shortage.
Can you talk a little bit about like how that impacted Big Jim Farms?
It's just difficult, and I think with each year it's more and more difficult just finding good help and people who want to be in the industry of farming and harvesting green chili. It's a lot of work. It's very labor intensive.
So that's even an issue before COVID it hit. Is that right?
Yeah, I would think so.
What do you think that is due to? Is it just that it's not... the industry itself is not attracting people like it used to?
Yeah, it's really hard to keep people interested and involved just because of the work and what it takes to put everything into it, for sure.
Now, you yourself actually worked on the corporate side of the family's business for a while, in the office, so to speak, but now you're more involved in the field side of things. Can you tell me how that transition happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, we always, as a family, we have to help each other out every year, no matter what. So even if I was working, we were always required to help during farm season. The shift happened when I had my son about 7 years ago because I wanted to have more flexible work. So I was in the corporate environment. I'm an accountant. And I just wanted the ability to be home with him. And so, of course, I went back into the farm stuff, and then I became very interested and passionate about it. I wanted to continue it on. It seemed like all of the cousins in our family weren't doing, you know, what it was necessary to take it to the next generation and keep the farm going. So I just tried to do my part, and that we opened our UPIC farm 5 years ago mm-hmm. as a result of, you know, just trying different things and different projects within the farming and the family business.
And what is kind of like your day-to-day work now like?
Well, I do everything involved. And so I do a lot of, you know, the operations like the accounting, marketing, things like that, mm-hmm. and then managing people. But I also do a lot of the farm stuff with my dad. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm out in the fields as well. We had to replant our crops this year, helping with that, weeding, planting. Mm-hmm. But I don't do like everything. He does like a lot of the tractor work, but mm-hmm. I try everything I can to help out. And
what can you tell me about kind of the experience of when you're out there actually picking the chili pods, like how you feel when you're doing that?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And that's part of the reason why we opened our farm, is because I got to experience, you know, being out in the farm my entire life. And my son, and he got to be alongside with me picking things, eating straight from the plants. And so it was so special for us. And so we wanted to offer that to the community where they were able to get that same experience. I think it's like very therapeutic. It helps clear your mind. It's very rewarding just to connect to the land and just to kind of see, like, be rewarded with like your efforts from the beginning to the end, and to be able to, you know, feed people with mm-hmm. your work throughout the year. So it's just really exciting that other people can now experience that, at least, you know, for moments that they are there.
Right. And when you're kind of out there, I mean, you mentioned that there's like the mental health component as well. How is that different from, say, working in the office environment for you?
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, you get all the elements. So you're getting the sunshine and being outside, you know, the earth. And so we get a lot of volunteers, and then just the, you know, general public that comes out to visit us. The feedback I get from them, like right away, is just like how I guess nurturing and therapeutic it is. It helps. They said it feels like serene and just really tranquil just to be there. Yeah. And so it's really, when I hear that, it just like makes all of our work and effort just worth it, because I know that it's just benefiting so many people in such a way that they probably didn't even expect. So we get people that volunteer all the time, that, you know, a lot have turned into like full-time employees. And so it's because they like really fall in love with it, and it's something that they don't want to be without, and it helps them in their personal, you know, things that they're going through.
I know that, you know, I've spoken to some folks who say that maybe green chili won't last into the future here in New Mexico. I mean, how do you feel when you hear something like that due to drought or what have you?
Yeah, you know, it's really sad, just because, you know, they told, you know, farmers here in New Mexico not to farm this year because there's, you know, no water, and it was supposed to be cut off.
Right.
And, you know, our chili is like who we are. We're, you know, New Mexicans, we're just so connected to it. It's our sense of pride. And, you know, to say that we won't have green chili, it's devastating. I think that we have to, and we will do everything possible to keep it going, because, you know, we can't lose something like that.
Right. Well, I have to ask, do you have a preference when it comes to our state question, red or green?
I think I like green.
You're a green fan.
Yeah. So, I make both, but I just noticed that I eat green more.
Now, we actually have a poll on this very question on our Twitter feed. If our listeners want to go to @KUNM News and cast your vote, we'll be announcing the official results of that at the end of the hour. We'll settle this question once and for all. I'd like to welcome my next guest, Joram Robbs, the executive director of the New Mexico Chili Association, which is a nonprofit organization that advocates for and promotes the crop. Good morning, Joram.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you for joining us. So, amidst all this chaos and worry of the last year, I know personally it's been really nice to see the chili stands popping up around town and smell that delicious aroma of roasting green chili. It's like a little bit of normalcy. But of course, I'm seeing all this from a consumer's point of view, and the reality is much more complicated. Earlier this year, as Chantel mentioned, there was a lot of concern about the drought decimating the crops. How are things looking now that we've reached September, Joram?
So, like you said, the drought was very, very scary early on in the spring. Farmers didn't have their allotments of water off the river to irrigate with due to the drought. All of the chili this year is grown on fields that have pumps that can pump water out of the ground. And it was a hard spring for some of those farmers. The rains came in and really helped out. They caused a little bit of damage and flooding and disease, making a little bit too much of a moist environment in the field. But it turned out okay, and we definitely have a bumper crop out there where there's a lot of chili on these plants.
Well, and did COVID affect how chili growers' operations are working this year?
You know, it really kind of it affected the market quite a bit. Not really changed the way that they're working. Of course, all of the processors have implemented COVID safe practices. You know, glass in between the workers on the processing line and stuff of that nature. But you really saw a shift in the market when restaurants were not used as much last year due to the pandemic and being shut down. It really saw a shift in those sales at the grocery store level for people to take that chili home and eat it with their families at their home.
So was it like kind of fewer people? Was there fewer places for chili to be purchased because of the restaurants no longer able to operate, or did it all shift to grocery stores and it's about the same amount being sold?
No, we saw about a 40% decrease in sales as an industry because of that restaurant closure. So it definitely changed it up. But then also when the grocery stores do not roast, like they didn't roast all of last year, and a lot of them are roasting this year just due to the lack of workforce, that really affects the sales as well. Some people just don't have the ability to take 40, 50 pounds of chili home and roast it, you know, or the time. So that affects the sales of it.
Now, Chantel, were you seeing this kind of impact in your family's business as well? Chantel, are you there? Go right ahead, Chantel.
We didn't notice it too much because we did continue to roast and whatnot last year. We actually noticed a lot of people coming out more because of COVID because it wasn't a safe activity for them to do outdoors.
Right.
And so we did see an increase in the business, which was nice, so that they could still have that experience.
And obviously we're talking about a pretty different kind of chili business that you're in that you focus on people coming out and picking their own chili, whereas Joram's talking about selling to the overall consumer market, which is different.
Yes, exactly.
So, Joram, can you tell me a little bit about this labor shortage that's going on right now? What's happening?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's pretty bad out there, and it's not just affecting chili, just, you know, as everybody can see, all the help wanted signs everywhere. But chili is still a completely harvested by hand crop on the green chili side. So very labor intensive. We estimate that there's about 3,000 harvesters in the state total during the harvest season today is what is needed. Right now, we're seeing numbers of 40 to 60% short across the state in terms of the harvesting. And then also on the processing side, which impacts the farmer as well.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we will be right back.
Did you know KUNM accepts unwanted vehicles, like that car you've had parked in your driveway and don't need anymore? Maybe it's time to let it go. If you're ready, give us a call today. We'll have it picked up for free, handle all the paperwork, and you'll get a tax deduction. It's easy, and it really helps support KUNM. Get started by calling 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Princess Anna Amalia of Prussia had a tyrannical father who punished her for playing music. When her father died, things got no easier. Her brother then controlled her life. But through all of her struggles, music was her main source of comfort. Music by a persistent princess on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about Chile today, and we absolutely need to hear from you on our official state question, red or green. Give us a call at 277-5866. Give us your answer, or you can weigh in on our Twitter poll. Go to @KUNMNews. Look for the poll and cast your vote. Right now, I'm speaking to Joram Robs, the executive director of the New Mexico Chile Association, and we were just talking about how New Mexico's chili fields are facing a labor shortage of harvesters. So, Joram, what is this due to? What is causing this labor shortage?
You know, it's been something we've been seeing in the industry for a long time. It's a difficult job that a lot of people don't want to do. And it's become increasingly more and more short. But last year with COVID, it really ramped up that shortage quite a bit. We were seeing numbers of 40% short, which typically we're seeing about 10 to 15% short every single year, kind of steadily over the years. And then coming into this year, we saw numbers to 40 to 60%, 70% on some farms. And I think there's a lot of factors. I think COVID is definitely still one of them. And I think increased unemployment benefits is the other factor that has changed out there that is keeping a lot of people from entering the workforce.
Now, since, I mean, we're talking about some unique factors for this year and last year, of course, what about those years leading into it? Is it, as you said, just a question of it being a difficult job that people don't want to do? Is it a question of people are getting paid better to work in other areas of the agriculture industry? What's going on?
You know, I wouldn't say they're getting paid better. The harvesters, they get paid a piece rate. They're guaranteed minimum wage through labor laws, but most of them are making $15 to $20 an hour out there. Some of them more than that. I've spoke with some farmers that say they have harvesters out there that are taking home $1,000 to $2,000 a week. So there's some good money in it, but it is hard. It's an honest job. You know, typically we've seen a lot of guest worker program labor that comes in to pick the crop. We see a lot of green card programs coming across the border to come pick the crop. And I think that's really where the shortage has happened quite a bit. Is even in our neighboring country of Mexico, they're seeing a shortage down there as well in terms of their labor. So it's a combination of things. We don't have a great guest worker program anymore at the federal side, and that's something we would definitely like to see change. And it's a situation that we are all scratching our heads trying to figure out how we can fix it.
So it does sound like there is an immigration policy component to what you're speaking about, at least in terms of the last few years, exacerbated by some of the unique factors going on during COVID.
Yes, sir.
Now, do you think that, I mean, is there a silver bullet solution here? Is there something that can be done at the state level to help alleviate this problem? Or is this just a trend that can't be mitigated?
I think there's a few different things. I think we need to handle unemployment better in this state, for one.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should push for better guest worker programs that work better for farmers and get more labor into the state. And then the other side of that is moving away from the labor and really push for trying to develop a green chili harvester machine that would pick the chili well and eliminate the labor factor.
Now, Chantel, does your farm use guest worker programs at all?
No.
Okay, so that's not an issue for the kind of work that you guys are doing?
Not so much.
Do you have thoughts as to how the overall labor shortage, I mean, obviously we're dealing with a different scale here, but do you have thoughts as to what could happen to alleviate the labor shortage overall?
I mean, I would agree with getting, you know, the guest labor thing going to. I'm not so sure about the machine to pick it. But.
Right. Well, let's talk about that machine harvesting, Joram. As Chantel mentioned, and as you mentioned, this is an industry that still relies on hand-picking the pods, but that could be changing. What do you see on the horizon for how our chili is harvested, Joram?
So we're pretty hopeful. There's two pieces to the harvesting of green chili that has to fall into place. You have to have the yields that will help the farmer be able to make his money back on his operation costs.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the machine, and then you have to have the destemmer. And when I say destemmer, it would be a machine. Right now, all chili is destemmed by hand. You're popping off those hard, woody stems by hand because you don't want to be eating a green chili enchilada and have one of those stems stabbing your gum. So that's another piece of it that also has to come into place. And there's a few machines out there that do harvest green chili. They do a pretty good job. We could use some better technology in them, and none of them are mass produced yet. As well as there's a few options out there to destem. But the big thing is it's not a one-size-fits-all problem, right, or solution. Like Chantel just mentioned, it doesn't work for some farmers. It doesn't work for some smaller farmers. The unique farmers that are in this industry, it doesn't work for all of them, but it might work for some.
Right.
And that's something that we have to take into account also. But I would be pretty confident that we'll see some chili being picked by machine within the next 5-10 years. Or we're going to see a lot more chili coming from Mexico. Those are kind of the two options that we're at right now.
Now, where are these machines coming? Are they being developed here in the state?
Yeah, so there is one that is working on New Mexico State University. The Ag Experiment Station has done a lot of the research on these machines and the varieties that are pickable by a machine. There's a couple that are being changed a little bit. There is a machine that came out of Israel, and it's been changed a little bit here in the state as well as over in Arizona as well. So a lot of farmers and our agriculture education people out there are working together to try to figure out this solution.
Now, one thing that maybe we should discuss is that this would change what the chili that you buy at the market looks like. How would that, what would happen there and why?
So when you're picking a green chili with a harvester, it does damage the pot. So the majority of this stuff is going to be chopped. So those whole pods would not work. Those are still going to have to be picked by hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and with that, about 90% of the industry sales are in chopped chili. Mm-hmm. 10% are in that whole pod chili. So it's got to be more focused on the mass production, you know, the chili that's bought in cans at the stores, the chili that's bought in the frozen baggies at the restaurants or in the cups or the jars. That's really where this works. For that unique fresh market, it's still going to be a hand-harvested crop. Mm-hmm.
Now, Chantel, what is your reaction to this possibility?
I mean, anything to help, you know, that would make it work. But I know a lot of people are very, like, particular about their chili and the way it looks. And that's, like, one of the things that, because they're able to pick it at our farm, like, they get, like, the biggest, the freshest, the best one that they possibly can. And the ones that are, like really, like, you know, particular, like I said, like, they, like, have to have it mm-hmm. perfect. But I mean, I think it would help overall.
Right. So it wouldn't eliminate the kind of chili that you're talking about, because this would be a more niche market that would continue, is what you're saying, Joram?
Exactly. Okay. You know, those type of operations are still going to continue. There's still going to be hand-harvested chili. And I'll tell you one thing also. A lot of these farmers, whether they're big or small, the reason we haven't seen chili being harvested before is a lot of them like having their harvesting crews come out. Mm-hmm. You know, an average harvester right now, I think, is 65 years old, is what the New Mexico Department of Agriculture put out.
Wow.
And they've been coming out for years. These farmers have built relationships with their workers, and that's a big change to get rid of that labor. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of components go into it, and you know, a lot of them just wish it was like the old days. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed in terms of cost and shortages. It's a difficult subject.
Sure. Well, joining us now is the Secretary and Director of the New Mexico Department of Agriculture, Jeff Witte. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff.
Hey, good morning.
So, as we've been talking about, agriculture in general, of course, faces a lot of uncertainty in any year. This year, COVID is adding to those troubles. Joram is telling us that this labor shortage is resulting in a lot of chili sitting out there in the field. But the state recently started a labor incentive program to supplement wages for this very reason. Can you tell me about that program and how it works, Jeff?
Sure. So we met with the Chili Association in Joram and his board of directors and several others. And the governor, the lieutenant governor and the governor worked to allocate some of the ARPA funds towards the labor program. About $5 million has been allocated towards that. And the way it's working is that we are able to help supplement the wages of the chili pickers, the chili workers in the chili fields, the workers in the chili processing. And the hope is to attract more folks into that field, so to speak, and get more chili out of the field, help the farmers out as well. We are paying about $4.50 an hour, up to $4.50 an hour for these workers, in addition to what the farmers are paying them.
So that's more $19 an hour? Is that kind of what it's looking like?
Yeah, it gets up to about $19.50 an hour. It sure does. And so right now we've benefited about 789 employees, mm-hmm. and we've paid out around $280,000 into this program.
And this is a program that people, you know, if they hear about this and they're interested, they can check out on the New Mexico Agriculture, Department of Agriculture website. And then we also have it on the KUNM Let's Talk New Mexico page for this show. So, Joram, could you tell me, how has this program helped to address the labor shortage issue as far as you can tell? How have the growers you've spoken to reacted?
Yeah, definitely. There's some growers out there that are taking advantage of this program, and they've seen a little rise in terms of harvesters coming out to the field. Same on the processing level. Processors have reported that they're seeing more and more applicants ever since this program has started. So, you know, we're very grateful for the New Mexico Department of Agriculture and Lieutenant Governor and the governor and her staff and for what they did. We had a meeting with them on Monday, and I think this program went into place about a week and a half after that. So it was super fast work, and we were very grateful for that.
So, Secretary Whitty, if this goes well, and it sounds like it is going well, do you think that this might turn into a longer-term program, perhaps a permanent supplementary program, or is this kind of a one-and-done deal?
Well, right now, the way it's set up, it's a one-and-done deal. We're using one-time funds to really evaluate the situation. You know, my hope for the long term is that I heard your conversation about the mechanical harvesting, and we've got to look at alternatives. Mm-hmm. You know, the average age of the folks in the field is over 60. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the real opportunity for the chili producers and processors in the future is going to be moving towards mechanization and really creating those higher, what I call higher value opportunities in the processing and other areas, getting more chili out of the field quicker and into the consumers' freezers and into the processors a little bit faster. So I think it's a one-time opportunity the way it's set up right now. When I look at overall statistics, and right now we have harvested about 63% compared to last year, we were at 59%. So hopefully this program is having an impact.
And are there other crops in New Mexico that are being supplemented in this same way?
No, right now it's limited to chili.
Okay. And so why chili versus other crops? I know that I think chili is our like fifth most popular crop in New Mexico. Is that right?
Chili is of course it's our iconic and it's our the one that makes New Mexico famous, and it's our iconic crop.
Right.
The labor shortage really hit home, and it hits home across agriculture. But really, when you've got a perishable commodity like chili, if you don't get it out of the field, you lose the entire crop.
Right.
And so the governor was concerned about that, and that's why we moved on this opportunity for chili only. And this is a short-term program. This program only goes through the end of October, which will get us through the green chili picking season.
Right. Now, you said, how is this funded again?
So it was funded using the American Rescue Act funds, the federal funds that came in for the COVID response.
So it's not a state taxpayer-funded program?
No, sir. No, sir.
So we've also talked about immigrant workers being key to the chili industry, like many industries here. Some advocates, like Joram, are mentioned that guest programs would be helpful in this area. Some advocates are pushing for Congress to create a pathway to citizenship for undocumented essential workers. What do you think? Would that help with this current labor shortage?
Yeah, so any opportunity to... We've got a lot of workers here who have been here for quite some time. They're legal, documented workers. I think if they had a pathway to citizenship, you would see more folks maybe in the agricultural industry working long-term instead of on a seasonal basis. I think there's opportunities to really help that situation.
Mm-hmm. We just got a Twitter message from Jane. She says that her grandfather was the first to grow green chili in Chavez County in the 1970s. That's cool. Loves hearing about the industry. She wants to know why we avoid talking about undocumented workers, although we did just mention that, so we are talking about it. But is that a bit of a taboo subject in the industry, Secretary Whitty?
All the growers that we work with, they try to verify that the folks that are working on their farms are documented workers. They have responsibilities to the federal wage and hour folks to ensure that they're employing documented laborers. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest challenge that any industry has, including agriculture, is the verification process. And that's why my hope is that Congress goes and creates a pathway to make it simple, to make mm-hmm. it where a farmer can easily verify those documents and those employees that they're employing and make sure that they are legal.
Now, Joram, do you also see this as a potentially helpful thing if there's a greater pathways for citizenship?
I do, and that's something us as an association are pushing for and lobbying for with our senators and representatives of our state. It's these farms, these processing facilities, they're businesses. They don't want to break the law because that puts their business in jeopardy. They're small, family-owned businesses at that as well, so having a way where they can definitely be sure that they are hiring a legal workforce would be a huge impact for them.
You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. You can weigh in on today's conversation. Call us at 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org.
Several Oklahoma tribes are among those getting a jump on additional booster shots in the fight against COVID-19. The state is seeing a surge of infections in school-aged children. We'll get an update on vaccines, variants, and breakthrough cases all across the country. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, 20 years ago, the events of September 11th shocked the world and forever changed life in the U.S., including the future of immigration in this country.
And I remember paying attention to that because I still had a little bit of hope that I was going to travel to D.C. So there was that sense of like postponement and we're just like waiting for things to get back to normal.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We are talking about the future of green chili and how we can keep this iconic crop part of New Mexico's culture and cuisine for years to come. There is still time for you to call and weigh in, 505-277-5866. I'm curious as to whether you listening at home would be willing to pay more for your chili if it meant keeping chili in New Mexico. So another issue, perhaps even a bigger issue than the current labor shortage that is affecting New Mexico farmers, is climate change. Our state is in a multi-year drought, of course, and green chili does not thrive in heat, believe it or not. There is no quick fix here, but how are chili growers adapting to this challenge? Department of Agriculture Secretary and Director Jeff Witte.
Well, I think what you're seeing, farmers are very resilient. And as you said, New Mexico's is a dry state. Drought seems to be more of the norm than the exception. This year has been an unusual year, and we're living through a drought with very restricted irrigation schedules. You know, in the southern part of the state, where a lot of the chili is grown, you know, below Elephant Butte Dam, mm-hmm. The farmers were allocated about 3 inches of water this year, as opposed to the usual 3 feet. They had to adapt. They had to either consolidate their fields. They had to have access to well water, that kind of thing. But I think what you're also seeing is you're seeing research being done at places like New Mexico State on drought resistance and, mm-hmm. and other varieties that can basically thrive in these new climates and these new environments. You're also seeing the farmers change their irrigation technology and their irrigation schedules and the way they've adapted either through, you know, at one time it was all flood irrigation. Now there's a lot of drip irrigation where you're putting what I call prescriptive amounts of water on each plant as opposed to flooding an entire field. So I think you're going to see continued adaption in that in that area, mm-hmm. you're going to see farmers look at taking advantage and trying to understand some of the new stuff that's coming out in these programs on carbon sequestration and carbon capture. I don't think we all understand, even here at the Department of Agriculture, we don't understand all there is to know about carbon and carbon capture and carbon sequestration and all that. But I can tell you we are learning, and it's going to be an important facet in our agricultural production in the future.
Okay, looks like we have a call from Kevin in Santa Fe. Good morning, Kevin. What is your question for us?
Good morning. To go back to what you were talking about a minute ago, I was just wondering whether or how the farmers in the chili industry look for workers, how they try and contact them, and whether there might be other ways available, you know, through technology or something. Because I think a lot of people now, if they're looking for a job, they don't really think about agriculture. Mm-hmm. And if they were introduced to the idea, some of them might, you know, want to do that work.
Joram, let's go to you. Is the labor shortage, could that be alleviated by greater outreach, other paths of getting the word out?
You know, there's opportunity to get more employment on the farms in New Mexico through different types of outreach. In terms of the chili season and harvester specific, it's a very seasonal position. These farmers go from having, you know, four or five full-time people to 100, 150 employees overnight when they start picking chili. So it's very seasonal, and then when the chili industry is done or the harvest is done, they end up leaving and going on to another job or wherever, you know. And so most of that seasonal workforce is used through labor contractors. Farmers will utilize labor contractors to find the labor and bring them to the farm, and they will pay those labor contractors directly to pay the employees. So the other way it's done is through the H-2A program. That's our federal immigration workforce program right now that's available to farmers. And that will go through the Department of Workforce Solutions at the state level, and then go out to USDA in terms of getting those workers to the farms. And they'll bring people from all over the world, really. I know there's some workers from even Jamaica right now that are in New Mexico picking chili. So those are kind of the two options that farmers are using right now. Might be an option to try to reach out and get some new full-time workers. But that's a great observation, and I think there's some more work we can do there.
And Secretary Whittier, we've talked a little bit about how this the worker population is aging quite a bit. Is there any possibility of maybe doing some more outreach to younger folks through other means than maybe are traditional?
Oh, absolutely. So every other year we host a conference called the AgriFuture Conference, and it's geared towards those opportunities in production agriculture. And we really highlight, and we have at that conference, we have, you know, producers talking to future wannabe producers. That's one avenue to generate some excitement. The other opportunity is that the New Mexico Legislature funded through our department an internship program that we've got available to anybody in agriculture who wants to. It'll supplement for a few months half of the salary of an intern, and so that they can basically attract and try to attract that new employee and get them into their system, give them a training opportunity, and really provide maybe that future agriculturist that opportunity to get into agriculture. So there's a couple of ways there, but we've got to do more. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you know, a lot of these folks, and I spend a lot of time, you know, we're part of New Mexico State University, so I spend a lot of time talking to students in both the College of Agriculture and some of the other colleges. And agriculture just doesn't look like it did 50, 60 years ago. It's a high-tech opportunity these days, where even the tractors are, you know, basically controlled by a GPS system and that kind of thing. And when you start talking about these new technologies and opportunities, even kids that didn't grow up on a farm become interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see, my hope is that you're going to see a movement towards, as New Mexico has the second oldest agriculturalist in the nation, that the next generation is going to be critical. In the last census, we had one of the highest growth rates of new farmers, coming young farmers, young beginning farmers in the nation. And we've got to continue that in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. I want to welcome our final guest today to talk about some of the more flavorful aspects of Chile. That's Andy Murphy. She is the host of the Toasted Sister podcast, which highlights and promotes indigenous foods. And Andy is a producer for Native America Calling and the 2021 Civil Eats Foodway Fellow. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You know, we've been talking a lot about how the role of red and green chili is so important here in New Mexicans. And of course, I wanted to know, if does that extend to the Native American community here in New Mexico?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, chili here in Native New Mexico is very important. I mean, chili is chili is an indigenous product. It was cultivated in indigenous Mexico a couple thousand years ago and made its way up here to the southwest, present day New Mexico, through indigenous trade routes. And from there, Spanish got a hold of it and just kind of spread it all over the world. So it's really, had an awesome journey throughout the world, mm-hmm. and added so much heat and flavor to world cuisine all over the place. I mean, you imagine, Asian cuisine wouldn't have that fiery chili without, indigenous Mexican science, without indigenous science. And here in New Mexico, a lot of Pueblo farmers, I mean, they're like the OG mm-hmm. Chili farmers here in New Mexico. I mean, they're like, 200 plus generation here in, in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And me, I'm Navajo, I'm 100 plus generation or whatever here in New Mexico. And chili's just been always there, part of, especially part of Pueblo crops and Pueblo agriculture. And, us as Navajo on the other side, we've always, liked to have that part of our food fare as well.
And now, Secretary Witte, I want to ask you a little bit about what we're talking about here, which is that people are very passionate about making sure that their chili does come from New Mexico. How are we making sure that people can get the chili from New Mexico when that's what they want to buy and not from other markets?
So we've got a couple of ways of doing that. We've got the New Mexico Chili Advertising Act. So if any chili that's offered for sale or chili product offered for sale in the state of New Mexico, if it is being represented as New Mexico chili, we at the Department of Agriculture, in fact, make sure that it is New Mexico chili. Even your salsa products. So you'll see salsa products that may have a New Mexico name on it. Those products have to be registered, and we verify the source of their chili products in mm-hmm. that product. If it is not from New Mexico, they have to label it as containing chili not grown in New Mexico. So that's one way. It's easy, and we have a list of those products on our website as well, where people have registered. And I think it's important. The other thing is we have our Taste and Grown with Tradition programs that we have in the state of New Mexico. Those are easily identifiable labels that are really important for the citizens to take a look at.
Looks like we have a call from Gregorio right here in the South Valley of Albuquerque. Good morning, Gregorio.
Good morning. I just want to say that I find your program, I've listened to your programs on other subjects before, but this one really got me. I find it very, very interesting, and okay. I want to thank you for it.
Well, thank you.
I am a 78-year-old new Mexican. I've only been here for 2 years. It seems like only 2 months, but I'm a city boy from Los Angeles, but my parents are from here, and when they got married, they moved to California, but I have the... tengo el rancho en la sangre, and I've been doing for the last 12 years an annual chili run to California. Before I'd moved here, I was doing it from California, come out here to Hatch, take a 16-foot trailer and my pickup truck to take it back. And every year it grows. This stuff is addictive, as we all know. It sells better than weed, I'm telling you. And I'm getting old, and I need more help with the labor. But I just want to say, you know, I could tell you my whole story, but it would take too long. But I'm still doing it, and I just got back from California about 4 days ago, taking a 174 costales of chili from Hatch to my friends in New Mexico, in California.
Well, you're a hero to them, I'm sure.
Get connected to some of these people that you've been talking with, or some other people around the Albuquerque area. I'm new here. I'm in South Valley. I bought my home here. And it's been a dream come true, because I spent my summer vacation after junior high school in Belen with my cousins. And I've been visiting for all these years and doing the chili run for the last 12 years.
Well, I'm gonna have to cut in here, Gregorio, but thank you for calling in. And we'll have the information about our guests on our website, KUNM.org. Andy, I want to go back to you. Gregorio was talking about the addictive aspects of chili. Were you a big chili fan growing up?
Oh, actually, no. I wasn't a big chili fan when I was growing up. I didn't like chili, and I didn't like Mexican food because it was so hot.
Right.
And I think that's maybe a northern New Mexico thing. It's really, really hot, and as a child, you don't want to like hurt your face while you're eating. But it wasn't until I went to college down at NMSU in Las Cruces where I fell completely in love with Mexican food and fell in love with chili. And, you know, since then I've been just adding chili to every other thing that I cook now.
Now, have you noticed any differences in the way that the native community uses chili versus in other parts of the state?
Well, you know, we add, you know, chili to a lot of you know, traditional dishes. There's a lot of chili in, you know, contemporary dishes. I mean, it's pretty much the same, but, you know, I think the flavors and just the dishes are different all across New Mexico. I mean, there's definitely a difference between northern New Mexico and our chili use up here, and then a difference, you know, compared to down in Las Cruces, you know, closer to El Paso, closer to Mexico. That's a lot different, too. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many ways chili can be used. It can be, you know, altered in so many different ways to produce, like, a different flavor. And I think that's the great thing about New Mexico, is just the difference of chili use and chili flavors just wherever you go.
Well, I think that is all the time we have today, which is really unfortunate because I was really enjoying this conversation. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, Chantel Wagner, Joram Robb, Secretary Jeff Witte, and Andy Murphy. Officially, 57% went for green today on Twitter, so there it is. The official answer to the question, as far as we're concerned, is green. If you missed part of the show, you could stream it online or subscribe to our podcast, which you can find wherever you find your favorite podcast. Join us next week for Let's Talk New Mexico. We're discussing the surge of violent crime in the state. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Robert Maldonado live tweeted. And Megan Kamrick produced the show. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.